Join me on May 13th to the 21st on our Paraguay Investors Tour. Earlier this year, I unveiled an exciting real estate project in Paraguay that sold out in one day. Now, you can come down to Paraguay side by side with me to learn about what everyone was so excited about and even see new exciting projects you can participate in. We will also examine residency, banking, safety, and many other important aspects of a proper Plan B. Join us for this luxury tour to Paraguay on May 13th to the 21st, and tickets include all food, alcohol, transport, activities, hotel stay, and domestic flights. For more information, please email Susan James from my team at trips@expatmoney.com or visit our tours page at expatmoney.com. Email trips@expatmoney.com for more information. All Expat Money subscribers are welcome to join me for this trip. Seats are filling up fast. Email trips@expatmoney.com.
We all dream of seeing the world, but the realities of living somewhere outside your place of birth can be daunting, to say the least. Welcome to the Expat Money Show, helping you make the most out of your overseas career through conversations with successful expats on investing, entrepreneurship, self-improvement, and continual education, all while sharpening your financial acumen. Now please welcome your host, with over 20 years of overseas experience, Mikkel Thorup.
Holy crap, it's here. This has taken me 7 months of my life to complete, and I am super pleased how it turned out. What is Mikkel talking about? It's my new book, Expat Secrets. You're going to be able to find it on Amazon right now. Let me just give you the full name of the book because I think it says a lot, okay? Expat Secrets, How to Make Giant Piles of Money, Live Overseas, and Pay Zero Taxes. Boom. I really like that. Basically, the book breaks down everything you need to know for leading an international life. This is timely information and modern, and it's a fun read. You can buy your copy right now by going to Amazon and searching Expat Secrets. This will really help support the show to grow. And if you want to be an awesome human being, what I want you to do is leave the book an honest review on Amazon. It actually makes a huge difference to new authors like me. Seriously, I mean this. Please get a copy of the book and please leave the book a review. It's just good karma. Okay, enjoy today's episode. Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Mikkel Thorup. This is the Expat Money Show, and today's guest comes to us from Chiang Mai, Thailand, after spending 11 years as an American expat in Hong Kong and China. His company, Global From Asia, focuses on online businesses, and he works closely with the more traditional import and export company, especially those who are traveling between mainland China, EU, USA, and Southeast Asia. His clients are either using Amazon, B2B, or selling direct on their own websites. And each year, they bring together some of the most influential expat entrepreneurs to help their clients grow their businesses on a global level at the Cross-Border Summit. And 2019 Summit will be in Cartagena, Colombia. Please welcome to the show, Mike Michelini. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good. Thanks so much for having me. This is a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Mike, why don't you take a couple of minutes and kind of talk us through your backstory? How did you arrive in China? How long you been over there and what have you been doing?
Sure. I mean, the story, especially in China, they liked was I worked on Wall Street in New York City. I'm, you know, right on Wall Street at Deutsche Bank. But I always wanted to do my own business. I always wanted to kind of, you know, be an entrepreneur. And as soon as I was there, I started figuring out how to do online business, started even playing with mobile apps with my colleague, but really got into eBay. And of course, anybody doing e-commerce even back then led to China. So all roads led to China for manufacturing, and trying my best to do the Skype and Alibaba stuff while I was working on Wall Street, you know, nights and weekends or sneaking some during lunch. And, you know, basically it was building up enough that I took jump and quit the Wall Street job. And I don't want to say directly to China. Went to California, San Diego, on the beach, Ocean Beach. Did sourcing and e-commerce, and led me to China full time in 2007. And kept extending my trip. And well, you know, as you said in the intro, I'm in Chiang Mai now, but still in Asia. 11 years later, there's a lot to cover. But yeah, it was for my e-commerce and sourcing and, you know, manufacturing is what led me here.
I love it. So talk to us a little bit about Shenzhen and why you chose that place in particular.
Sure. So before I moved, I well, I didn't think I would move, honestly, but I did a month trip in the trade show season. A lot of listeners probably doing business with China know about Canton Fair and these trade shows, but I went in October 2007 and spent a month, went to Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Shanghai, and Beijing, and I never even heard of Shenzhen when I was in school. You know, I think most of us just hear Hong Kong, Shanghai, Beijing, really, maybe Guangzhou, but, you know, started seeing it because of Alibaba and all the factories with FOB Shenzhen and sourcing. And so I came there, really put on my itinerary was because I was buying from factories there and I wanted to check it out. And it was this young city right on the border of Hong Kong, but it's still mainland China. And I don't get too technical, but I think some listeners might know there's different types of dialects of Chinese language. There's the two big ones are Cantonese and Mandarin, but the main one, official one, is Mandarin. And Shenzhen is also Mandarin language because it's a new city and it's an entrepreneur city. And it was right next to Hong Kong. The weather is really almost too hot at times, but there's no snow. I don't really like the snow. And there's lots of factories there. Plus, on a little bit technical side, I was a business, you know, business owner. I didn't have a work permit. I was on a business visa. So I was hopping in and out of Hong Kong, which is counts as an exit entry every 30 days for like a year or two until I got my work permit and company set up. But, you know, I think just a combination of the factories I was working with were some there. Of course, there are others in Ningbo and other parts of China, but also I liked the weather. It was a good price. It had Mandarin. It was also right next to Hong Kong. So that was my main criteria. Shanghai is a great city. I mean, there's so many, I mean, everywhere, so many cool places, but that's my main criteria.
And so how did you make out with the language? Were you able to learn quite a bit? Do you speak Mandarin now?
I can kind of get by. The crazy story is I can read and even write better than I can speak. I mostly use apps and I study characters. But when I first got there, I hired my first assistant I met at the trade show, was Melissa. And I tried to get her to teach me Chinese. We did like an hour after lunch, but then we got so busy and I'm like, oh, let's just... You know, I never took it so serious. I should have maybe gone to a course, but, you know, I can travel and I can have basic conversation, but I can't really claim to be able to have like a deep business conversation with somebody in Chinese. But the problem for me, I think a lot of others in my situation is I never committed to living there that long or never thought I would be there that long. There was always times I thought I would go back to the States or I thought I'd go to a different country where there's some people that just sort of like hardcore China or hardcore, you know, wanting to live in a somewhere long term and learn language. I was there for business. So, you know, that was my excuse, I'll say. So not really diving deep.
Well, no, I understand completely.
Some people go there. Yeah, they go and they do that. You could do the Shenzhen University or you could go to university. You can do like 8 a.m. to noon every day. And I know some of my friends that did that. And I'm on the ground. I'm you know, I learn by doing and I should have done the proper classes. There's also chances in Chiang Mai. I know people even going from China to Chiang Mai to learn Chinese. So.
Well, I heard that they have a huge Chinese community there as well.
It's massive. I mean, my wife is Chinese. One of my best outcomes of being in China 10 years. She's awesome. And she's been making amazing connections here. It's just a huge community. Literally, I just left the meeting. There's just new Chinese people coming in every day, it seems. It's just a huge flood of Chinese people here.
Well, I think it's pretty funny because, and this is from my listeners, but Mike and I jumped on a private call a couple weeks ago, and we were just chit-chatting and just having a talk. And when we started to talk about our lives, there were so many things that were in common. Because,
yeah.
Like, my wife's from China as well, and we're also shopping for a house in Chiang Mai right now, and Mike has just moved to Chiang Mai. And I was like, oh man, that's crazy. So if we end up getting a place, maybe we'll end up being next door neighbors.
Yeah, man, come on. There's so much inventory, I feel. I just see these signs everywhere. I think there's websites, but maybe you or I or somebody listening should come in here and make a website. It seems like there's opportunity to make this more efficient, but it seems like people put signs up for sale. It's crazy.
That's crazy. So talk to me a little bit about why you decided to leave China and relocate everyone over to Chiang Mai.
Sure. It was a huge popular question lately. I think it started with maybe the school. I think there's a few different things that were like the milestones. So we have our events in China, you know, for Global From Asia, and we've been enjoying that and getting good success. So we've been experimenting other parts of Asia for events and other places. And my wife and I were sitting down after the cross-border summit in April, and we noticed a lot of people were just coming from around the world. They weren't really we do online business, we do online content. We have, a lot of different ways we connect with people. And we realized that our location didn't really matter. I mean, even if we kept doing events in Shenzhen or in the city, we could just come back, which we're doing actually for a smaller event coming up. So we had a 3-year lease on our apartment, and it was coming up, and we still had 6 months left. But I said, hey, Wendy, we should ask the landlord what's their plan. And their plan was to come up pretty significantly on the rent. And at the same time, our daughter's coming up for schooling, and it's not that cheap. And also, we weren't totally happy. The kid, our son in school wasn't really learning much English, even though there's some English. It was the internet. It's a Hong Kong school, technically. Mm-hmm. But so I think it was a combination of the cost, the quality, and the realization that we could kind of almost be somewhat anywhere. So we decided we didn't pick Chiang Mai right off the top of our head, but we decided to take a trip in July. Together, we sent the kids to grandma, or her parents, their Chinese grandparents in North China. Mm-hmm. So basically, we took a trip in July, almost a month until the early August, where we went to the Philippines. I also have some online team there, and we also went to Chiang Mai, and then we went to KL, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and we went to Kathmandu, Nepal. So those are the four places that we put on our hot list. I don't want to expose our preferences, but we both decided mutually to just seem like the best place. Malaysia is tempting because there's some immigration policies that seem pretty attractive. Mm-hmm. But we just felt most comfortable here. The schools really seem to stand out for us, the cost and the quality. And there's like Australian teachers and Americans and Canadians. And I guess they all just want to take a year or two in Thailand. And there's probably podcasts about that specifically. But actually, it felt like any school we picked could have been great. So we just felt really good. And it was a little bit rushed, to be honest, because that was July and we came here in August. So we thought September would be when the school started, but that's the basic story.
And then how about for friends when you were in China? Did you hang out with mostly expats there in Thailand? Do you hang out with mostly expats here, or do you really incorporate yourself with the locals that are there?
In China, I try my best to have local friends, but it's still, I have to say, the majority of my friends are probably expats. Depends what you consider, we call friends. I mean, I had acquaintances in my neighborhood. I live in a very local area of Shenzhen. And of course, Futian's a little bit, could be expat, but I lived in a neighborhood that was barely any expats. But I would still go out on weekends to meet expats that had kids usually. And so far here, I've been mostly meeting expats. But I should be more social. I just focus on events, or I've been kind of in my little home world. I'm not near the downtown of Chiang Mai. I'm near Promenade Mall, which is not too far, but I think a 15-20 minute drive from the Maya Mall or the downtown area that all the tourists and maybe the cool hip expats live.
Well, because I always think of Chiang Mai as quite a young expat entrepreneur community, like a lot of the 20-year-olds, the digital nomads working from the laptop, trying to build the next big app or the next big business, and really shoestring type of thing.
Yeah, that's what it's known for. What I've been finding is there's a lot of others like us that are kind of hidden here and not in the scene of, there's so many meetups, like every day there's a meetup, like what you said, and I've been to some of them, and just last week I was at one, just felt like I should socialize a little bit. And you go around the room, hi, I'm John, I came from Miami, I'm a real estate broker, I'm taking a break, I want to look for something to do. Hi, I'm Jane, I'm from Italy, I took a break from my insurance company, I want to be a digital nomad. It's like all newbies at mm-hmm. these events, like fresh off the plane, like seriously. But there's a lot of these longer term expats that are just not as active in the meetups, that have families, that are more established, that I've been also finding too.
So really like an underground community if you look a little bit harder.
Yeah, I think no disrespect to the newbies, or there's some event organizers that are here for 10 years or something too, and they're always trying to encourage the more established expats to come, but I think you know how it is. You get older, you don't want to go to every like every Tuesday night meetup, you know.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And then, you know, it's a little bit different mentality when you've got a wife and kids and you're building a business to support your family opposed to, you know, building the business to make sure you have enough drinking money.
Yeah, I could see it. It would have been a lot of fun. I had my fun in China too those 10 years, but I'm sure there's plenty of fun here too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to dive in now about the Cross-Border Summit. Tell me a little bit about this, how it began, and kind of what it is for my listeners who don't really know yet.
Sure. So Cross-Border Summit is started in April 2016. The idea came in 2015, and the brains of the business, my wife, it was 2015, I think, you know, maybe the fall, and she's like, you should really do an event to bring everybody together. You know, what was happening was people were visiting from overseas, and like I mentioned earlier in the show, a lot of people come during that trade show season, so it was this trend where more and more people would want to meet and want to get together around that same time, which is the spring and the fall of each year. And so we decided let's do one in the spring season of 2016. So it started out as a one-day event, April, I think the date was 2016, Saturday. And it was a full day. And, you know, I think, as you know, one of the big benefits of doing podcasts is the networking, and you meet some really amazing people. So we were able to get some great people to come and share their experiences and knowledge. And we had about 120 people or so. And the events are extremely exciting, but also extremely stressful. But we had amazing feedback, and we repeated it now we just finished our third in April 2018. And we've been doing it always in Shenzhen. And we are, you know, been growing quite a bit, and the reach and the different audiences. And like I said, we've also been moving, and we have some amazing partners and people that want to get involved. So maybe I'll save that for another question, but basically it's been expanding, and we're going to other parts of the world even.
So talk to me a little bit about what you guys discuss at the events, what the structure is like now, and how you guys kind of set these things up.
Sure. So cross-border e-commerce or cross-border business is another form of international business or global business, but we kind of like this a little bit more of a specific word, meaning doing business between two different countries where a buyer and a seller are on different countries. Of course, we're in China and Asia, and so it is heavily about import and export from China, and that's a lot of our content's about as well. So we try to do some importing into China, but it seems like the most of our listeners or most of our audience is interested in exporting. The huge trend, as you probably talk about, is Amazon FBA and people buying in China and selling in Amazon US or Europe or even different markets now, like Australia is expanding. And so we talk about, you know, how to source products, how to sell on e-commerce and Amazon. And we have some content about importing into China, the customs, Chinese e-commerce like Taobao, Tmall, Jingdong. So it's about, I like to say, go both ways, or import, export from in and out of China or Asia. So even in the last one in April, we had people from Southeast Asia, like talking about Lazada, which is a popular like Amazon of Southeast Asia, and talking about new markets. We talked about South America in the last event too. And so it's really about kind of doing business globally, with a little bit of a trend of being positioned in Asia or China or Hong Kong.
And I noticed when I was doing my research that you guys have actually done some other events as well. You guys were doing a accelerator leading up to Canton Fair.
Yeah, we've put that together. We have I work with a lot, you know, I always try to find win-wins with other influencers and experts. So we have Rico you had him on the show from the Made in China podcast.
Yeah, Rico's been on my show. He did an awesome job. He's a great guy.
He's awesome. So we worked together to take a small select group of people to actually not just go to the trade shows, but actually work before the shows, because we think it's important to have your research done before you even go, and work with them to, you know, really make sure that you're have the product research correct and the sourcing, and know your product really well, and can actually make your own brand and product once you get into the show and for the long term. So that's the pre-accelerator. Yep.
So basically, someone would be wanting to get into FBA or Amazon for the first time, or maybe they've played around a little bit on their own. But when they're really ready to take things to the next level, they might join an accelerator like this, do the research before with your team, and then come to Canton Fair with you, and then visit the factories. And really, when they walk out at the end, they're going to have something tangible.
Exactly. So yeah, it would be probably not for a brand new Amazon seller, but somebody that's already maybe doing other, maybe no brands or other people's brands that wants to go into private label or, you know, making their own brand.
That makes
and
sense.
And some customers, maybe not a brand new design, but slight modifications with your own brand.
But it's really hand-holding through the whole process and really taking people to that next level, eh?
Yep, because Rico is based there and, you know, he has an office and a team. So the idea was we would be taking it to factories, taking it to markets even outside of the trade show. But there's like year-round markets there. So you're really going to make sure that you connect with the right people and really know what it's going to take. And then with get all your homework and get all of your prices and components and knowing your product, I think that's the biggest problem with a lot of people that are, it was my problem too, you know, when I first started was I didn't really know my product. I just trusted the factory or just thought that's their job to know the product and how to make it. But actually, it's your job as the buyer, you know, to know your product. I think a lot of people don't seem to realize that. And then, of course, it's the factory shouldn't make bad quality, but it's your job to tell them what is good quality and what isn't good quality, because some markets don't have as strict guidelines or you know, QC standards as other markets too.
So what happens if people just decide that they want to go to Canton Fair on their own? Well, I guess we should probably start with what Canton Fair is and what someone would expect, and then maybe why you wouldn't want to just show up all by yourself and what happens when people do.
Sure. So Canton Fair is, I can't remember how many years or how many shows they've done, but I feel like it's over 150. I think if you count twice a year for like the last 50 years or so maybe. But it's based in Guangzhou, China, which is also in the south, kind of near Shenzhen, Hong Kong, which we've been talking about. It's massive football fields. It's actually, maybe it is a football field sometimes, but it's these huge convention halls. And you have to take a golf cart sometimes to get from one side to the other. You can wait in line or you can walk, but they take golf carts across. It's just so massive, and it's basically these 10 by 10, I believe, meter booths. And factories from all around the world, or China, excuse me, sometimes other parts of the world, but mostly China, come there and show their products. It's kind of like a science fair or, you know, I guess any kind of trade show, but I believe it is the biggest one, I think, globally for factories. And there's multiple phases. So the idea of a phase is phase 1, 2, and 3. 1 is usually electronics. 2 is usually the home and gift. And 3 is kind of like fashion usually, or baby products. It's usually the least popular. And it's almost a month long. It's like 3 weeks long, usually, and it's twice a year. It's in the spring and it's in the fall, so April and October. And it's growing. I mean, there's events around it. We know, like you mentioned, Pre-Accelerator, we have a program. There's just all this community around it. And then there's more than just the Canton Fair. There's ones in Hong Kong as well. And even Shenzhen has some now. So you can get your fill of factories and samples and prices and catalogs and just overloaded with product ideas and prices.
So talk to me a little bit about why people might want to not just show up on their own and would want to come with an accelerator group.
Sure. I mean, we've done trips as well, and we noticed with the Canton Fair, we took some people there after the cross-border summit. We've taken some people there. And, you know, sometimes they just have no idea. They're just like, I just want to take a look. I want to get some ideas. But if you just go there without having any idea what you're looking for, I mean, like I said, you need to take a golf cart from one side to the other. You can spend a day looking at like dishware, or you can spend a day looking at keyboards. It's just every factory is there. So you can't just kind of like walk around and just find a product. You at least have to have a category idea. And the best is if you have a sample in your hand, or at least sketch or mock up with an idea of what you want, an idea of how many pieces that you want, and you can get prices right there. So if you have your homework ready, and of course, you can use our program, the pre-accelerator, or, you know, even that, you can do a decent amount from overseas, you know, in your home country. You can find out what booth they're going to be at. You can find out, you know, what other booths will be near them. There's so much you know, I think it's like anything in life. Like, the more research you do in advance, usually the better the reward or the effect in the long term. Because you don't want to, you especially if you're flying from the U.S. or overseas, you're spending time and money to go there. You don't want to just kind of, it's a month long, but each phase is about 3 or 4 days. So you don't want to really waste too many days, because, you know, so many times we've seen people just go there, browse, and get some catalogs and then leave, you know, but that there's so much more you should be ready to do. You should be ready to do deals.
Well, and I would imagine with pretty much every major factory in China in attendance, it's got to be overwhelming with the amount of information that would be coming to you from all sides, that if you really don't know what you're doing, or if it's your first time at something like this, you're really just going to get lost. Like, you're just going to become overwhelmed with so much information, not know what to do, and end up basically wasting the event.
Exactly. I mean, you don't want to go there as a tourist. You want to really make the most of it. And that's why we put this program together. You know, a lot of people should just not fly out here and just think they can walk around and find stuff. They can do a lot of work before they come.
So do you guys think that you'll be doing a pre-accelerator before every Canton Fair now? Or do you think this is just going to be one-off time?
We want to do it yearly. Canton Fair is twice a year, but we feel like, you know, that might be a little bit too much. We've also noticed other events and others. We think once a year. Yeah, of course, we're still testing it. We're gathering feedback, and we've been, you know, working with the select previous group. And we want to not do it too often, and it's not as effective, and we want to have a good group of people. So Rico and I and the team have been deciding to do it once a year. October, we're thinking, is a good time.
Very nice. And I imagine it must be very, I don't know how to say this, interesting, unique, to try to set up events in China and overseas as an expat. Can you talk to me a little bit about what that has been like as an experience?
Sure. I mean, somehow I've gotten used to not having full control. I used to maybe be a little bit more of a control freak, or wanting to know everything that's happening. I think it's a good thing, but I think you have to kind of let go to be a manager or a business owner, because you can't do everything. You have to trust other people and have a team. So I've always been lucky to have good people around me to help, and trying to get the right people in the right seats is kind of a motto I've learned from management books. But I think the biggest is just keeping a little bit of a buffer and being prepared to adapt. Especially to China, it's something I always tell people: is if you're trying to change China, you're gonna lose, because there's, you know, the thousands of years of history and a billion people. So you can't change China. You know, you have to change for China. You know, you can't change how it is. So there's sometimes I have to really bite my tongue when things don't work out exactly as I thought, and I basically have to leave this kind of slack to let things kind of sometimes fit, and maybe I don't have the exact perfect plan for, you know, even small things like seating arrangements or door check-ins or food arrangements. It's just sometimes you got to kind of like let things roll a little bit. But it's tricky, because Westerners, I think, you know, foreigners, expats are just used to everything being black and white and clear and organized. But in China, sometimes it's just so chaotic that you kind of got to get used to there being a little bit of a chaotic element to the events. I hope I don't sound unorganized or something. But.
No, because I know China, so I'm kind of picturing in my head at the same time. You know, you go into something expecting one thing, and it's just not at all what you had in mind or you envisioned. So I'm just kind of laughing on the inside here, because I would think it'd just be a nightmare to have to set these up, if I'm honest.
It used to drive me nuts. I didn't do the events for quite, you know, I actually had help with startup weekends and other events, but even before that I was managing staff, and they say one thing and another thing happens, and something you gotta kind of like just compensate for that and be patient for that, and just know how to adapt.
So talk to me about any skills that you think are really advantageous for being able to set up events, you know, 100, 200, 300 people, these type of things that you do for Cross Border Summit.
One thing is I try to write very clear directions. I mean, I think that's important in any business is SOPs, standard operating procedures. I know you've done a good job with this show. I mean, you had a really good system for me getting on here. So this, I think you understand. And like, you know, you, especially at events, you need volunteers, or of course you can pay everybody, whether it's a volunteer or, you know, a college student or a staff, you know, they appreciate having this very clear direction of, I used to think I was like an idiot, you know, I think I was like, who is this? They're going to laugh at this, but I'm like, audience control, your job, stand. There's three different positions, coordinate with the others in audience control. You are in the front, you are in the middle, you are in the back. Your job is to make sure that people are not talking too loudly. Not if they take their phone, tell them to go outside, you know, like they have all these rules, you know, and you just have, and then they would print it, you know, and I do in Google Docs, but it's blocked in China. So, you know, download as a Microsoft Word, have a meeting, give them the documents, they would print it. Usually I'd email them, they would have it printed. They would love that. You know, have different shifts for managers and making sure the managers knows what everybody's doing. And one thing that saves us a lot in China is WeChat. I think anybody doing business with China or has a Chinese friend or a girlfriend or a boyfriend knows WeChat. So one of the benefits is it gets overloading, but is groups. So you can quickly make a WeChat group. So you'll have like a WeChat group for the volunteers. You can make a WeChat group for morning volunteers or, you know, management. And then you basically have all these groups that are sharing information. You have an event group. So in the event group, you have the attendees. And, you know, the day before you make a group. So, you know, I email people to come, but then I usually really try to tell people, please add our WeChat, get into our groups, ask in the groups, read the groups, because you don't have to repeat the same thing like a million times. So groups have really saved our butts a lot with organizing. Yeah, I think some of those are some of the tips. Of course, the marketing is a huge challenge, but, you know, like we're talking about events, you know, 6 months, you know, even a year in advance. So just trying to get the word out, get people interested, know what it's about, know where it is, and try to make a story, get people involved and take their feedback. You know, people will recommend a speaker they want or they'll recommend a topic that they want. You know, try to really listen to the audience.
So do you find that you have a lot of the same people that came from 2016 to 2017 to 2018, and now, inshallah, 2019 again? Do you find it's the same group of people who come over and over again? Or each year it's a completely new crowd, new type of event?
There is a core group of fans or supporters, which I love. But I would sit there, and unfortunately, I mean, it would be kind of great for me if it was a majority, but I think maybe about 20-30% have been to every single one, which I still think is pretty high.
I think that's very high. 30% have been to all your events. That's fantastic.
Well, maybe not 30, maybe more like 20. But yeah, I mean, they love it. I mean, we have an event in October called the Cross Border Matchmaker. It's a smaller style event for roundtables, and people are coming back. So but of course, there's lots of new blood or freshmen maybe, or people that really want to make business connections, and people love it because they come into China or Asia and they haven't really made many connections, and in like a couple of days they meet so many amazing people. And you know, I think just like your show, the expat, you know, Expat Money Show, and expats are very social people, right? I think mm-hmm. they're outside of their home country, they want to meet people, they want to make business, whereas, you know, when you're in your home country, there's so many like closed people. But I think by being an expat or international business person, you have to be social, you have to engage. So they really make relationships. And there's been a lot of business deals and business partners and even girlfriend boyfriends. I don't know if there's been a marriage yet, but there's some pretty long term relationships that have come.
You'll
from
definitely need to get a testimonial for that one when that happens.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think it's true because there's something to be said about being an expat, because in your home country, you have that social structure. You have your friends and your family, and you have people that you've known and grown up with, you know, in a lot of cases, your entire life. But when you move overseas, you know, you don't have those type of long-standing relationships. So people really work hard to build a relationship. And when they do make a friend, actually those relationships, those friendships become very strong very quickly, I find. Like, some of the people that I've met overseas, they're like my blood now. Like, they're like my brothers and my sisters. And I might have only known them for a year or two, but that's because I really don't have, you know, a lot of my family here or people who have known me my whole life. So though the intensity of the relationship, I think it's really accelerated when you're an expat.
That's, I think, one of the biggest perks about being an expat. I'm seeing it even, Wendy's said she's seeing it in Thailand now, being a Chinese, because the Chinese people are not as social when they're in China, but she's saying they're just more helpful here. So it seems like as any culture, you know, I think when you're outside of your home element, home country, homeland, you realize, especially if you see somebody from your own background, but even others, you're just more open. You have to be to survive.
Just going to take a quick break. Okay, new book is here. It's called Expat Secrets, How to Make Giant Piles of Money, Live Overseas, and Pay Zero Taxes. This book took me 7 months to write and publish, and it's a culmination of some of the best stuff I've learned over my 20 years living as an expat. I cut out all the crap and tried to give you the real meat with this book. If you ever wanted to live overseas, or if you are already living overseas and you want to take things to the next level, to legally reduce your tax bill, to live a more international life, and get the best of everything planet Earth has to offer, then you must go to Amazon right now and purchase your copy of Expat Secrets. Pause the episode and go take a look. It's cool. I'll wait. Seriously, you guys are going to love this. Enjoy the book. So talk to me a little bit about the cross-border matchmaker, because I understand it's kind of in between the accelerator and the cross-border summit in the sense of scope and size that you guys do.
Yeah, I mean, we've been, you know, I think with anything, it's just testing the market and seeing what people like. But we don't want to do the summit too many times a year. We don't want to kind of like drain the community with, you know, too much overwhelm. So we came up with what we call the cross-border matchmaker, which is a one-day event where people get business speed dating and they get to connect with others on a one-on-one in the morning. And then we have a couple of speakers, no PowerPoints before lunch, lunch networking together. And then the afternoon is my favorite part, which is what we've done at the cross-border summit. It actually came from the cross-border summit, was the roundtables. So what we did is we had speakers, you know, of course, all day. But then at the end of the day, we would have abilities for the audience to sit with a speaker. You know, we try to get 8 to 12 people into a table and really engage with the speaker and not just the speaker, but other attendees at that table around that specific topic. So it's like Facebook marketing, or it's Amazon listing optimization, or it's logistics from China. You know, people will be able to engage with other people. And people would love that. They didn't want to leave, like, after these events. It was the end of the event, and we couldn't get people to get out of the room. They just wanted to, I had to pay extra to the venues, because they wouldn't leave. You know, the venues like, we got to charge you for this. So we decided to make an event out of it. And yeah, so we have multiple different experts, we call them, and we have topics, and we try to get people to book tables. And it's the whole afternoon where we just spin people around different tables and different experts. And
so do you put people topics on like a time limit? Like, okay, 20 minutes or 30 minutes. And then as soon as the horn blows or the whistle blows or something like that, everybody moves tables to something else that they want to learn about?
Yeah. So what way we do it is there's two phases. So phase one is a group of depends on how big the matchmaker event is. We're trying different sizes, but for now we have about 30 total, so 15 tables for two phases. And then the idea is people would choose the tables they want, and then in that hour and a half block of phase one, there would be two about 40-minute blocks, and there's time for shifting. So you get about 40 minutes each table to go around the table, learn what everybody's doing, ask questions to the experts, or experts can engage with people's specific business situations. And really dig dive in. You know, we also noticed sometimes some speakers were really experts in their industry, but just were shy to speak on stage or didn't have time to make a presentation. But so that's what we're trying to tap into. Also another thing we're trying to do is more local community, because we do a lot of between different cultures and languages with the cross-border summits and cross-border matchmakers. So we're trying to have it where even we can have different language tables. So it's the challenge is the language, honestly, because we have such amazing people. We've tried simultaneous translation at the speaking events, but it's still not the same. So this is a way that people maybe could focus on a certain language as well at the table. And we just, as long as we disclose what language will be the dominant language. And we also are bringing in interpreters to sit next to people and help them to introduce themselves. So it's also really amazing connections can be made across borders.
That sounds amazing. I remember when I went to Funnel Hacking Live earlier in the year, and it's an event in Orlando. There was something like 3,500 entrepreneurs there. And we did a roundtable event. And I think we did 4 30-minute sessions. And I went straight to the table with Peng Joon and sat down like right across from him. And then they blew, like, so we talked and started asking questions, got his opinion about some stuff. They blew the horn and no one from that table left, but more people came. And then they blew the horn again after 30 minutes and then another crowd. And we were still sitting there. And I just basically spent like an hour and a half, 2 hours just talking one-on-one with Peng Joon and getting opinions about different things. And I know it was probably a little bit greedy, but honestly, at the time, I didn't care. I was so excited to be able to hang out with him, and then took a whole bunch of pictures and just chat, because he was such an awesome guy. He's also based out of Asia. Speaks from stage and stuff like that. His stuff's amazing. Awesome. If anyone wants to check him out. I think one of the other really cool advantages with doing the roundtables is you really don't need to prepare the content or anything in advance. Really, the attendees provide the content in the form of questions.
Exactly. And we're trying to get the questions before the event even, and have the speakers or experts ready ready for those questions. And we're also really early stage. I just got suckered into another AppSumo deal for events. I actually haven't even had a chance to learn it, but it's supposedly a way people can engage in the event with another screen on the wall, and people can see the chats and the questions from the other participants. So we're really trying to figure out how to use more, you know, technology as well, so that people can engage even more. You know, I think the amazing thing is getting all these great people from, as you know, within a specific topic or interest together in one under a roof, and try to maximize that as much as possible.
Well, that sounds awesome. And now I noticed also when I was doing a bit of my research that you guys have taken these different summits, and you've actually brought them on the road with you. So I think you were in Vietnam. You did some events there. Can you talk to me about that?
Sure. I mean, we are Global from Asia, and actually it's kind of why I'm glad I called it Global from Asia, not Global from China, because I guess I always had a plan to go outside of China with it. And, you know, we have actually a lot of our audiences in Southeast Asia. So, you know, we connected with some of our super connectors in the community that were interested to host meetups. I wouldn't say it's a cross-border summit, but we might do cross-border matchmakers in these different countries and leading up to a summit. But yeah, we engage with the community. We have co-working spaces that we're on board, and we bring speakers to connect and engage with the community. And it's interesting. I think that's the beautiful and also challenging thing is the markets are all so different. You really kind of can't really standardize too much, especially I think, at least I feel in Asia. I think a lot of local Asia, especially Southeast Asia, are a little bit more introverted and shy, especially to foreigners or expats. I think, you know, we talked a little bit in this interview about if I have expat friends or local friends, I think a lot of times the locals are just a little bit more shy to engage with foreigners. So, yeah, I mean, we've been really trying our best to engage the local community as well as the expat community. Of course, the language is one issue too, but not just the language, but the style. Like in Vietnam, I remember I was talking to the local organizer of the events, and she really wanted to change it quite a bit. And that's the challenge, because you want to have some kind of standardization. So, you know, McDonald's, I think, also had McDonald's and, you know, these franchises do adapt to the local markets, like even Walmart and others. But that's the challenge we've been facing. So we're just trying to figure out how to standardize it enough to keep the brand and the feel, but also localize it for the for that community.
So I guess it would really come down to writing the, almost like writing manuals, you know, exactly like you were telling me earlier in the episode about how you would have a Google document about what person's roles are, really building out those procedures and the manuals for how everything should be done, and then being able to refer to them and keeping them kind of as like an organic living document that you continue to update and update and update. And I think those types of things will really help with bringing the standardization that you were just talking about.
It's totally true. I mean, you know, I've been reading about all this management for years, and I also have experience, you know, helping with Startup Weekend in China. And they'd also just had these manuals, massive amounts of manuals, and it was all publicly online, at least when I was doing it. And, you know, people could just learn how these events were organized so that everybody was on the same page.
I know it's never fun for people to go through manuals, but really, when you have those types of processes laid out, it really is an asset that you're able to leverage over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, system set us free is, I think, one of the things on my screen. A lot of times in the handbooks, I think it's a pop-up or something.
Sounds like a Michael Gerber quote.
Yeah, I think, of course, I read these. I'm digging into another management book as well lately. Management is the core. You know, I guess there's culture in a company, and then there's you know, your team. But the manual is also just really the heart. And I used to not, when I was an employee in New York, I didn't really understand the value of it. But it's just amazing the way that you can just pass somebody that book and then they can figure it out.
Well, the way I like to think about it is, as an entrepreneur, I create the systems and the systems run the business. I don't run the business. I just create the systems. And then I just empower other people to follow those systems. And that's what I try to do. That's how we're able to grow this show quite quickly, and how I have a dozen employees that work for me now, is because I just spend so much time behind the scenes setting up everything. And then it's just really foolproof. And I just train people on how to do it. And then I let them go, you know?
Exactly. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, I think when somebody listening that might not have done that might not understand that feeling, but it just feels so amazing. And my favorite part actually is when a new person starts and I just say, read the man, here's the page, or here's the process, here you go. And then they thank me for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's very clear. People want to understand what their roles and responsibilities are, and, you know, how they're going to be rewarded. What are the things that are kind of the no-nos, the misdemeanors, and, you know, people want to know their place in this world and what they're going to do, especially if they're younger and they're coming into this for the first time. It's a real opportunity for them to learn how to be an entrepreneur.
Exactly. It's just something people should do sooner than later. I wish I'd done it as soon as I could, but it's just the most valuable thing.
Absolutely. So talk to me about what events are coming up. I know you've got a really big one planned for 2019. Can you walk us through a little bit what that's going to look like?
Sure. Our fourth annual cross-border summit is in, I think you mentioned earlier, Cartagena, Colombia, South America. So we're going on the opposite side of the world. And we have a really amazing partner there, Esteban, and we're making a Spanish version of the site and the podcast. He's been doing some shows already, and we are really trying to bridge China, South America, and the rest of the world. So it's going to be an amazing one. We're targeting 300 attendees. We're going to have two-day core event. We're going to have a little bit of a business trip for the people that want to take a little bit of an adventure if they're coming from overseas. It's going to be an amazing opportunity to meet people from, definitely people from the U.S. are going to venture over. It's not too far. People, you know, from Asia are already planning. I was on a call, so people plan to come over. Of course, people all over South America. It's going to be a trilingual, amazing international event about cross-border business. I mean, this time we're going to add in Latin America. We have multiple tracks. So it's really going to be an amazing time to bring people from all parts of the world and really learning about doing business in different markets, different cultures, primarily through e-commerce and online marketing. but also just through cultures and relationships.
I love it. It sounds super exciting. I think it's just a brilliant, brilliant idea.
Yeah, we've been getting really positive feedback. I mean, there's some people that feel like it's dangerous there. You know, there's that's actually why they want, that's why Esteban and a team there really wants to do it there, because there's this, you know, there's negative, some bad history. But it's, I was down there in February checking it out, checking out the venues, checking out the scenes. There's some islands we're going to try to take some people out to after the event. And it's just, there's so much, and South America is this huge gateway of opportunity. There's just so much untapped potential that just, I was talking to politicians there. I was talking to, you know, huge business owners looking to tap into international markets. So there's just really exciting things. And we usually do this event in April, but because we don't want to overlap with our friends in Canton Fair and the trade shows happening in Asia, we're doing it a little bit before. So March 6th, well, actually 7th and 8th will be the core event. There's a mastermind on the 6th, but yeah, it'll be a two-day main event. And we're also going to have a business trip afterwards. So people that really want to see some factories and logistics centers and free trade zones, we're going to arrange all of that. We have MOU signed with the Investing Cartagena division and also in Invest Colombia, I believe, and different government bodies are signing on board to support this and do what they can to make this an amazing event.
Well, I'll definitely vouch for Cartagena. When I was early 2000s, I want to say, I took a yacht over from Panama and landed in Cartagena. It took me like a week to get there. And Amazing. Basically, the history of Cartagena is that you had all the conquistadores that were all through South America. They took all the gold that they pilfered and mined, maybe, and they sent it all up to Cartagena. And then from Cartagena, they sent it back to Europe. So Cartagena has these huge walls and forts and castles. It's really like a living museum. Like, you just walk around the whole town and you feel like you're stepping back in time. It's just unbelievable there. So if anybody has an opportunity to attend and to check out Cartagena, maybe come a couple of days before and maybe a couple of days afterwards, it's just the most stunning, 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 beautiful place. And I know my listeners will just love it there.
Yeah, we'd love to see somebody there, and we'll definitely catch up and mention this amazing show. And the other cool thing is the water. You're right. The road's on the edge of this peninsula, and there's a wall, like you said, on one side, and there's like a road and the ocean, and there's a bay on the other side. And the water is something that splashes right up onto the road, into the cars. It's amazing.
Yeah, the whole place is just wild. And if people want to get involved before the event, I saw that on the website. You have some of the speakers listed, and people are actually able to submit questions and get a little bit more information from the experts that are going to be at the show.
Yep. We've been building out. We really want to try to bridge the online and the offline. So we've already gotten people contacting the speakers. It goes to us first so that we can, you know, make sure we vet it and collect everything. But people can fill out a form on each speaker has a profile page, dedicated page, where we share their bio and a little bit more about them. And then there's a form that you can submit to us. And any questions or clarifications and feedback you have about this person, we collect and we get to them. And it's been amazing already, because they get to learn. A lot of times they don't know how to connect to these people online, and it's already been very powerful, and we've been trying our best to do O2O, online to offline, and really try to add value before the event, during the event, after the event, to really build a community.
I love it. That sounds amazing. So if my listeners want to get involved, if they want to check out the website and get some tickets for the event, where can we send them?
Sure. We have a short URL, crossbordersummit.com/Colombia, or just crossbordersummit.com, and then there's the option to go to Colombia. And there's the different options of ticket levels and all the information you could know about, you know, the city, the venue, the agenda, the speakers. It's going to be an amazing one.
That sounds fantastic. Mike, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Such an interesting conversation and a real pleasure to have you here.
It's been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this, and I enjoyed sharing. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. We'll talk soon, okay, Mike? Cheers.
Definitely. Cheers.
Okay, I want to read you the reviews from the back of the book that some massively famous people in the international living space have wrote for me. See if you recognize some of these names, okay?
So Gregor Gregersen says, in Expat Secrets, Mikkel elegantly describes the many benefits that accrue to those that choose their country of residence and provides practical and timely tips and examples for doing so. This book is a game changer. Leif Simon says, having lived and worked overseas for more than a quarter century myself, I've seen expats make every mistake under the sun. Save yourself time and energy and learn from someone who has actually done it. Expat Secrets is the book to get you started in your international journey. Edmund John says, having incorporated hundreds of companies for my clients over the last 7 years, this book is very helpful for those that are starting out. And Michael Cobb says, a huge thanks to Mikkel for clearly written, concise description of the international experience as lived by a true globe-trotting pioneer. Especially refreshing is the chapter on the benefits of raising kids overseas. As the father of two third culture kids, I can personally assure you that no education expands the mind more than growing up overseas. And my good friend David McKeegan wrote the foreword to this book, but I will let you read that yourself when you go to Amazon today and you purchase your copy of Expat Secrets. Thanks, guys.
This episode may be over, but your journey to greatness continues by visiting our webpage and signing up for our newsletter. For convenient access to new episodes, show notes, and other crucial resources, visit expatmoneyshow.com. We look forward to you joining us on the next episode of the Expat Money Show. Safe travels.
Every month, we offer exciting new webinars for our community. Topics include how to use retirement accounts to buy real estate overseas, how to get a second passport in Latin America, why you should sell your stock portfolio and move your money offshore, how to buy beachfront rental properties in Brazil for less than $100,000, or apartments in Paraguay for less than $60,000. If you want to join us for free for these presentations with live Q&A, insider secrets, and exclusive opportunities with my professional network of experts, then go to expatmoney.com/webinars. That's expatmoney.com/webinars to register for free upcoming presentations. expatmoney.com/webinars.